You're listening to the Hippie Haven podcast, where we have honest conversations about how easy and sometimes how hard it can be to save the planet and why it's so important. If this is your first time listening, welcome. My name's Callie. I'm a zero waste activist and consultant, the founder of Bestowed Essentials, my line of ethical and eco-friendly lifestyle products, and I travel full-time around the United States in my camper van, hence my blog name, ahippieinavan.com, which is where you can go to learn more about me, this podcast, and all the work I do. My mission is to inspire you to take action, because the planet needs our help now more than ever, and I truly believe that together, we can make a difference. We are back today with Polly Barks of Green Indie Blog. Polly was actually the very first person I ever interviewed for the podcast back in July, although it ended up being the second interview that was published. In that episode, we talked all about how to advocate for zero waste, including online, in your local community, what to do if your friends and family totally aren't interested, and more. So if you haven't listened to that one already, be sure to add it to your playlist. Polly has been living zero waste since 2015 and has been teaching it as her full-time job for about a year now. She is about to launch a new online course called the Essential Zero Waste Blueprint starting January 1st, 2019, covering how to go zero waste in 12 different areas of your life over a 12-month time span, no matter how or where you live. She's here today to share more info on that course, including her 12 starter tips for a waste-free life. When I first saw you talking about your upcoming course, I was like, oh my gosh, this is really cool. There's nothing else like this out there, not even close. Some people have 30 or 90 day zero waste challenges, but an in-depth year-long course revolving around different areas and providing different options depending on what fits your lifestyle best, this is really revolutionary in our community. So tell me about your background in both education and in zero waste that makes you uniquely qualified to offer this course.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if I'm uniquely qualified, but I do try. So I have, like you said, an education background. That's what I started out doing. I taught ESL in Russia for 5 years, and then when I came back to the States, I spent about 3 years working in low-income communities with children with severe, like, behavioral, emotional, psychological, issues that required them to be out of the community. So I definitely dove into zero waste with an education background in mind. So all of my zero waste practices, I think, are tied to educating, because zero waste, you know, studying it on your own and putting it into practice in your own life is great, but we can only do so much as individuals. So being able to tie what I've learned on my own individual practices and, you know, sharing it with a wider audience, I think is a great way to kind of amplify the message.
And I think what makes you unique as one of the, I guess, leaders in the zero waste community, because you're certainly up there as one of the bigger names, is that you are very practical in your approach. And you're very authentic about the fact that, like, zero waste isn't zero. There's no such thing as zero waste. Shit happens, you know. It's okay to... Don't get upset with yourself. Don't pressure yourself. You know, life, everybody's life is different. Everyone's approach is going to be different. And you're also big on accessibility and not having to buy all these new things to be zero waste. And so, yeah, I think that with your background in education and knowing how to communicate with all sorts of different peoples, how to really connect with people, along with your practical approach, does definitely make you uniquely qualified. And like I said, I haven't seen anybody else doing anything like this, definitely not so in depth and such a long course. Like an entire year is a really long time, but I think it's also the perfect amount of time for how in depth zero waste is, because it's not really a 30-day thing. It's a hopefully like lifelong thing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I always tell people, like, I kind of got into zero waste in 2015 when I was kind of at a low point, when I was in a food desert with no money and no car and barely access to fresh produce. So that definitely informs my decision. But yeah, I mean, it's a long process. It's not a 30-day thing. It's not a 90-day thing. It's going to be ongoing. So I think the year is kind of, it seems like a lot, but there will be ways to access this information, you know, when you need it. So kind of just promoting this idea of, well, zero waste is more than just like bringing a reusable, which is great. It's more than, you know, just buying package free. It really is like an entire habit and lifestyle shift.
Yeah. And so what is included in your Essential Zero Waste Blueprint course?
Yeah. So the Essential Zero Waste Blueprint course is basically based around this idea of 12 zones. So 12 different aspects of your life that zero waste influences, because, you know, zero waste is more than a plastic bag or a plastic straw. So every month we'll have a different focus on one of the zones. And within each month, you will get a, you know, a module, a written module that you can read through. It also includes access to a private Facebook community where you'll be able to ask questions, share your wins, all that good stuff. And I think most exciting for me, because I really do love teaching, is I will be having two live workshops every month based around what we're talking about in the written course. So like, for example, in January, it's a low-waste kitchen. The main workshop will be about five food scrap recipes, and you can either make it along with me live and ask questions, or you can watch it later and, you know, when it's convenient for you. So just a bunch of different ways to learn and, you know, process like a lot of big ideas.
Who is the course geared to, and who isn't a good fit for it?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So I think that this course is primarily geared towards either beginners or kind of intermediate. And I hate to branch it out like that, but people who are just starting out or feel a little more comfortable with some zero waste practices, but don't know where to go from there. The kind of cool part about the course is in the written modules, there are different kind of tips. So you could have like a quick fix tip or a time to spare tip. So if you're just starting out, you might try the simple quick fix. But if you're a little more advanced, you might go for that time to spare tip, which is like a little step beyond. So it's also for people who are super busy. All of this comes from the many hours of researching and experimenting and failing that I did for like the last 4 years. And so if people are kind of keen to avoid that, that, you know, frustrating research period, I've already done the research. So, you know, why not share that with people? And who it's not for, I mean, I would say if you are very comfortable in your zero waste habits, if you feel like you have pretty much, you're pretty much where you need to be in terms of education and, you know, day-to-day habits, as well as if you are someone who maybe prefers to do the research on your own. If you, like me, have a lot of time to devote to looking into this stuff and like to do it yourself, maybe you don't need me guiding you through. But if you kind of want to, you know, jumpstart and not spend hours pulling out your hair in front of your laptop, this is a way to help.
And what is the cost, and do you have financial aid options?
Yeah, so I currently, it's priced at $250 for a one-time payment or three payments of $99. If anybody listening to this would like a discount, use Hippie30 to take $30 off.
Damn.
Why not?
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So just try to help that out. But I do have, you know, payment options too. Registration closes January 1st. If that's something that you need to kind of price out for a while. And I also do offer a scholarship option. So once a month, or I guess one person a month, will receive a free scholarship. Because I do understand that the price is very reasonable for a year, but maybe not everyone has the resources to pay for that. So I do offer one spot every month for free. So all you have to do is email me, polly@greenindieblog.com, put scholarship in the title, and I have three questions that you can find on the course page on my website.
And with the registration closing on January 1st, is that it? Is that the only time to get in, or will you be opening it back up throughout the year?
Yeah, so it's going to be quarterly. So I'll open it up again in March. The only thing is you will not get the live recordings from what you missed previously. So the first 3 months, you won't have the live events from those zones, but you can just rewatch them.
All right, let's talk about each of the 12 zones. So you'll be going in depth to a different zone every month, but today we're going to cover one quick and easy action tip for each of those zones, starting with a waste-free kitchen. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so I think the kitchen is a great place to start just because it is where we tend to make the most waste, right? So I suggest for everybody, if you want to focus on your kitchen, is to do a trash audit. And that's kind of what it sounds like. Take apart your trash, have a look at what's in there. Definitely think about food waste, recyclables, and what is just trash, because you really can't make any changes to your habits if you don't know what's in your trash, right? Like if you don't know what's in there, it's hard to swap. So audit yourself for a week, see what trash you're making, and then depending on, you know, what time and resources you have, figure out what few swaps you want to start with.
Awesome. And then zone number two is the bathroom. So what tips do you have for that?
Yeah, so I go for the waste-free bathroom second, just because that's another like super product heavy area. So my recommendation usually in the bathroom is for people to try a DIY swap and see how it goes. And I'm not saying swap everything all at once, like a lot of people get excited about and try to do, and then you get super overwhelmed and you're paying more money and it's super stressful. So choose one product to DIY and see how it goes. If it works, great. If not, try something new. I would say maybe like a deodorant or a lotion or even like a hair rinse or shampoo are kind of fairly simple ways to get started there.
And what's your favorite and easiest swap in the bathroom that you've made?
So I always tell people to start with deodorant. It's so easy. It's so cheap. And you probably have it, everything you need in your house already. So it's just equal parts baking soda, cornstarch, and coconut oil until you like the consistency. And that's it. It's that easy.
I haven't tried that one. I've just never been fond of coconut oil, which I know like everybody loves it, but it just kind of, my skin reacts to it. So
yeah, I've heard, I mean, I think you can use like olive oil or, you know, any other kind of oil. I wouldn't see why that would be an issue. But yeah, I haven't tried much beyond that because it kind of works for me. Sometimes I will use less baking soda because it can be a little irritating if your skin is sensitive. So kind of messing with those ratios. But yeah, try it with another oil. Why not?
Yeah. Well, and backtracking in a second, because I just jumped straight into the first zone. But when you did a trash audit, what was the biggest type of trash, or what was most surprising to you that you didn't really even realize you were making that much of?
So I do trash audits like not super regularly. I've kind of have my systems now, but when I first did it, it was definitely food waste. I wasn't composting yet, so just seeing the sheer amount of food waste that I was creating was kind of shocking. And I think if you don't separate out your food, you will also be surprised when you look at that. And then now, I guess after I had gotten rid of the food, it's just the small stuff. And it just starts to add up, like all these little bits of plastic from packaging or, you know, a couple of wrappers and just all this stuff. It builds up, and then that gets into the part of zero waste that's interesting, where you think, well, is it of value to me to really worry about these little like rubber bands that have snapped and twist ties, or should I focus on these bigger things? And I think that's where the interesting zero waste conversation really starts to come in.
Yeah, all those little bits of plastic really do add up, and they're so random and so unavoidable too. You know, you can buy something in a glass jar with a metal lid, but then it has that plastic seal covering the opening, or you get your produce and like, oh, luckily it doesn't come in a plastic bag, but it does come with stickers and a rubber band or a twist tie. And
yeah, well, and then it's yeah. like,
that's why zero waste really isn't zero.
No, and it's at some point not worth your mental energy to think about that. You know, focus on the bigger stuff, which I think is good for people to hear, because if you think of zero waste as like, oh, your trash for 10 years in a mason jar, like that is no. hard to dive into.
So back on track, zone number 3, so that would be in March, is green cleaning, which I think is perfect time frame. Did you like perfectly line that up for spring cleaning time?
I tried to be okay. smart. So green cleaning I think is another one, like not only good for March, but kind of to front load a very important aspect of our reducing our waste, because you know there's a lot of chemicals that we are breathing in and going into our waterways, and there are greener and cheaper alternatives. So this is kind of like the bathroom. I would suggest doing a DIY swap, so kind of looking at what you have, and once you run out of it, what can you replace? So, you know, these are the really simple go-tos, like the vinegar and water as a spray, and you can infuse your vinegar with citrus, or I've seen pine or ginger to give it a smell. But really, again, becoming aware of how cheap and easy zero waste can be, and not really disrupting your life. Make it easy.
Yes. And I love that you specified using up what you have first, because I know when you're getting into it, it can be so exciting and you see this recipe and you really want to try it and you're just really eager to do all these things at once. But definitely using up what you have before jumping into everything is a smart idea, because, you know, it's not really that eco-friendly if you're throwing away perfectly good things that you already had instead of finishing them up first.
Yeah, absolutely. And if they're, you know, regarding like cleaning products, if there is something that you are ready to get rid of and it's in generally good quality, a lot of times like homeless shelters or women's shelters will take those cleaning products because they always need them. So that's always an option too.
Yeah, great point. Zone 4, zero waste in real life. What do you mean by that?
So I think thinking about zero waste in your own house and, you know, kind of going grocery shopping and doing your little swaps can be kind of simple. But when you take your zero waste habits into the real world, that's really intimidating for a lot of people, right? Like going to the coffee shop and asking to have it in your own mug, or, you know, going to the bakery and asking to put the loaf in your own bread bag. It can be very intimidating for people, and I think that's a big hurdle for a lot of people. So that's definitely something to look at. And then I think my tip for that would, again, kind of be to mentally audit yourself, go through a couple typical days of your life and kind of see what kind of trash you're creating on a day-to-day basis, and then build your own zero waste kit. So if you go out to eat every day and the place you eat at has paper napkins, maybe just toss a cloth napkin in your bag. Or if you get a cup of coffee every day, make sure that you have a reusable in your work bag. So just, again, making those simple swaps and within the blueprint, we'll get a little deeper than that. But that's a great first step.
And then for zone number 5, low waste workplace, how can you get your coworkers to be more eco-friendly, or how how do you deal with it if your work isn't at all interested in making sustainable switches?
Yeah, so the workplace is tough, right? Because most of us spend a lot of time at a workplace. And it is different in every company. I have worked in companies that were very against people making changes, and I have worked in companies that are like, oh, yeah, sure, if you do all the work, I don't care. So it's different for everyone, and your experience may vary. But my big tip for everyone starting out, if there is not kind of a sense of sustainability in your workplace, is to be the model. And I understand that this is deeply unsatisfying for people because it's slow, hard work. But create your own zero waste work routine. So come in with your own mug, bring a reusable K-cup if your company loves the Keurig, or a coffee sock if your company has a traditional coffee maker. So just be the example you want others to see. You'd be surprised at what people will take up kind of unconsciously. And once you kind of have your own habits in place, then you can kind of dive into the audit that I will give you, and the plans to tackle your boss and coworkers, ways that I've done it effectively. But once you have kind of become the model you want to see.
Yeah, and I saw on Instagram you shared the other day, you work at a co-working space and you were getting them to switch over to loose leaf tea in little, I'm totally spacing on the word. What do you call those things that hold the tea?
I don't know what it's called. Like a tea ball, but it's a teaspoon.
Yeah.
It's a spoon that holds tea. I don't know.
I don't know what you call those spoons, but yeah, and I was really impressed by that. I think that was awesome. And have you had a lot of success? Are people using those, or are they still tending to go for like the tea bags?
Yeah, I mean, people are using them. I think a lot of times you have to just make zero waste seem more attractive, right? I set up a cute little station and I'm like, well, you can have these adorable little teaspoons with this beautiful bulk tea, or you can drink a gross packet of Lipton, and it's your choice. But people will typically go towards the option that seems nicer. So, you know, don't make zero waste a hardship. Don't make it seem like it's going to be really hard for your coworkers. You know, make it easy, make it nice, make it fun.
Yeah. And zone number 6, how do you minimize mindfully?
Yeah, so this is a big one. I think this kind of goes two ways, is not only minimizing what you have to have a, you know, cleaner, more peaceful home, but also kind of reining in our consumption habits. Because if you're minimizing, but you're still consuming, that kind of cancels each other out. So I suggest for a quick tip, a quick way to get started, is choose a room and do a 10 in 15. And what that is set a timer for 15 minutes, and you're going to go through and find 10 items that you can let go of. Now, the trick with this is it's a lot slower than most decluttering games. It's usually like 60 in 60 minutes. So you're kind of running around like a chicken with its head cut off, trying to find these items. But this 10 in 15 is really for you to think about what is giving you value, and also thinking, where is this item going once I get rid of it? Because it's very easy to declutter your house and throw away a bunch of stuff, but that is not zero waste. So it's about not only removing items from your own home, but mindfully passing them on to people or places that would find value in them. And that can be hard.
It can, definitely. And on the topic of like donating things to thrift stores, I want to touch on something that you and I have both mentioned on Instagram in the last week or so about the Salvation Army and not donating to them, or whether it's, you know, monetary donations, especially the holidays, they have the huge bell ringing campaigns, or donating, you know, physical objects to their thrift stores or buying from their thrift stores. And do you want to add something to that about your experience with the Salvation Army?
I can. I mean, the Salvation Army is known for being very anti anything, quote unquote, non-Christian, and, you know, anti LGBTQ plus. And I recently, in a town not far from mine, they had the Aryan Brotherhood and part of Hell's Angels soliciting donations. So I think there are plenty of other options where we can donate our time, our money, or our resources to.
Absolutely. And I'll include some article links in the show notes about the Salvation Army and some of the things that they've done over the years. Yeah, it's not the best place. I think just about every town is going to have some sort of other charitable shop or thrift store. I know, like, I'm in this tiny, I mean, I guess it's not tiny, but to me, it's a relatively small town in relatively rural area, Rapid City, South Dakota, and they've got multiple thrift stores, one for the senior center, one for the local, like, youth club. So there's other options besides the Salvation Army. Back on track, though, zone number 7 is gardening.
Yeah, so I think some people kind of find this surprising or find it maybe like, why did you include this? I don't know if this has value because I don't even have a yard or whatever. But I think gardens in whatever capacity makes sense for you in your living situation is so important because we need to appreciate how resource intense growing food is. I think a lot of our problem with food waste is that we don't value our food because it's cheap. We're very distanced from its production. So we've kind of lost the value of food. So growing something in your own home is so important to being less wasteful and more sustainable. So my tip kind of depends on where you live, but I would suggest an herb garden. I highly encourage everyone to have an herb garden, whether it is 3 little pots on a windowsill in your apartment or a little plot in your backyard. Grow an herb garden. Not only is it, you know, visually beautiful, you can use it to cook, and also you'll kind of start to appreciate how much, you know, energy, time, resources it takes to grow even this small thing, and, you know, let that kind of mentally connect you to the other food that you consume.
Yes, I love herb gardens, and they really are super easy to be able to grow. I mean, I was able to grow one attached to the inside of the back door of my van while traveling. So you really can do it almost anywhere. And my own tip, just to add it in there, if you feel like, oh, there's no way, like, I have a total black thumb, I can't grow anything, I cannot keep anything alive, start with green onions. They are so easy. You just buy them. They're like less than a dollar at the store. You use them up and you save the roots of it and you put them together in water and let them grow. And those things don't even need sunlight. Like, they've grown in, like, the back of the fridge. They've grown in the kitchen away from natural light. Like, as long as you put them in water, they will grow so easy, and they are almost impossible to kill.
Yeah, I love that. I've slowly gotten better, but it's definitely a struggle.
With green onions or other plants?
In general. I can handle green onions.
Yeah, they really are quite easy. Zone number 8, zero waste travel. What's your tip?
Yeah, so travel is super important. One of our probably biggest parts of our carbon footprint is plane travel, if we travel by plane. So really kind of becoming aware of that is super important. So my tip for this, it would be to calculate your carbon emissions. And, you know, if this zone is you're going on a trip soon, then you can calculate it for that trip. But it would also be helpful to calculate your carbon emissions, you know, for maybe like weekly travel to and from work and grocery store, what have you. And there are plenty of calculators online for this. And then after that, once you have your number, what are you going to do? So there are kind of 3 suggestions. You could pay a carbon offset, which is very reasonable. You could volunteer your time at a local eco somehow related organization, or you could plant a tree yourself or pay another company to plant a tree. So kind of, you know, calculating and becoming more aware of our carbon emissions regarding travel, and then also doing something to offset that.
Awesome. Yeah, plane travel is very, very consuming and pretty bad for the environment. But at the same time, in this day and age, it's almost kind of necessary. I think we're all going to get on a plane at some point or another to visit family for, you know, if there's some sort of emergency and you need to get back to your family quickly. Sometimes it really is the only option, but offsetting it is, I'm glad that that option is out there. Zone number 9, all about composting. Now, how can we compost? How can you compost if you're in an apartment or in the winter, or, you know, all of these different reasons why it might be hard to get started?
Yeah, so we will definitely deep dive into this a lot in the blueprint itself. But my big tip would, if you don't have composting yet, would be to find your best option. So there are typically like kind of 4 main options I'd tell people. Worm bins, which are great for apartments. Like a bokashi, which is also great for apartments, but pricey. A tumbler, which if you have a small outdoor space, it kind of keeps it off the ground and you just spin it around and it's enclosed, or just a traditional compost pile. So do a little research and find your best option for where you live. And then, you know, either do it right now or consider investing in one in the near future. Now, if you do already have compost, which I know probably a lot of your listeners do, I would suggest opening your compost to others. So actually this morning I walked out my front door and I had 2 boxes of vegetable scraps that someone had dropped off at my house, because I will take my friends' composting, you know, food scraps, because they don't have space and I need it for my garden next year. So become a resource for other people who may not have the ability to compost right now.
I love that. I saw your story about the compost fairy and I didn't know exactly what you meant. It's really cool that you just let your friends drop it off. And yep. I assume like on their way to work, just that's awesome.
Yep. It just sometimes appears. You never know.
The compost fairy. Zone number 10, an ethical wardrobe. What is an ethical wardrobe?
Yeah, so different for everyone. For me, I really hate doing the research around fashion. I am not interested enough in fashion that I care about it. So for me, an ethical wardrobe is buying as little as possible and secondhand, so I don't have to look into companies and see how sustainable they are. But an ethical wardrobe is different for everyone. And really, I think an ethical wardrobe boils down to not having more than you need, whatever number that may be, and also making sure that purchases are well thought through. If you're buying new, that you know where the supply chain is, you know kind of the environmental impact of the company you're buying from, or else, you know, like I said, going secondhand. And my tip for this section, people are always terrified of, but I think it's a great way to reframe how we look at our clothing, and it is to choose one outfit and wear it for 7 days. I did this recently. I do it every once in a while. And I think, you know, whether you love it or hate it, that's not really the point. But wearing one thing for an entire week does really help you think critically about your closet, right? Whether that's, oh my God, I really love everything in there and I hate wearing the same thing, or, oh, I actually could like wear a lot less because that didn't really bother me at all. It definitely helps us become more aware of what's in our closet and, you know, whether we need it or not.
Now, tell me more about that. Are you washing those articles of clothing in those 7 days? Do people notice if you wear the same thing over and over?
So I wore a linen jumpsuit. I washed it once. I'd like change my underwear. That I don't count underwear in the outfit, but you know, so like if you have like a blazer and jeans and a t-shirt, maybe you would only wash that t-shirt. So Yeah, just I think, you know, people want to push back against, oh, well, it's going to be dirty. Probably not. I mean, most people are probably not going to be that super sweaty daily. But if you are, you know, if you're working that kind of job, maybe, you know, just wash it in the sink at night. And to whether people noticed, no. The only people that noticed were the ones who were at my co-working space who followed me on Instagram and knew I was doing it. No one else said anything. Maybe they noticed, but nobody cares about you as much as you care about you, for better or worse.
That's so true. That's so true. People really don't care as much as you think they might care. Now, Zone 11 is probably my favorite, community action. So what does that entail? How do you get involved in the community?
Oh my gosh, my favorite too. A million different ways. I'm always doing 10 million different things in 10 million different directions, and I love it. So I think, again, kind of like how I referenced at the beginning, is that zero waste as an individual is a really great place to start, and, you know, working on yourself and your own practices. But we can only change so much as individuals. One person is limited, and I know that's kind of an unpopular opinion, but, you know, one person can only do so much. So the way that we amplify that effect is by sharing our experiences and educating and, you know, reaching out to other people in this frame of zero waste. And so that's what I mean by community action. So, you know, whoever your community may be, it might just be your family, or it might be your group of friends or your coworkers, or it might be like me, it might be the entire city, and you create a zero waste community in your city. But regardless of who or what your community is, my tip is to, just to get started in community action, is to find your zero waste skill and share that either formally or informally with your community. And so just to kind of give you my own example, when I first moved to Lafayette about a year ago, I decided, well, I'm going to teach a zero waste deodorant workshop because I know I can make that. It's really easy and people are always interested in it. So I had about 12 people come to my house and we all made deodorant. And some of those people are now friends. Some of those people are now much more into zero waste than they were when they came to that workshop. So yeah, find your skill, share it, and I think you'll be surprised at how far it'll spread.
Definitely. And we talked a lot more about community waste in the last episode we did, or community waste, community action in the last episode that we did together. So you can definitely go take a listen to that for more ideas. And then last but not least, zone number 12, which lines up with December of next year, is zero waste holidays. So how can we reduce our waste around the holidays?
Yeah, so this is a big one, right? Because we kind of get built up into this consumer frenzy of, you know, needing to buy gifts and having these big meals, which can lead to just a lot of food waste and waste in general. So I think if you are looking, I kind of have two tips for this. So if you want to go kind of easy, keep it simple, I would suggest do a holiday without wrapping paper. And so what that means to me is first move away from physical gifts. So think about what experiences you can give. And if you are buying physical gifts, get creative with how you wrap them. Maybe put them in a nice scarf or a tote bag or, I don't know, newspaper, whatever you have, reuse it, or, you know, wrap one gift in another gift. And then the bigger option, and if you're feeling, you know, kind of ready to jump into it, would be to plan a completely zero waste meal. So there is a great resource called Closed Loop Cooking, and they actually did a, I think it was completely zero waste meal for like a group of like 10 people. So they, I think they provide some resources on meal planning like that. So if you're feeling super inspired, you could dive into that and literally create no food waste for your holiday party, which I think would be so cool.
Yeah, that would. And I know Catherine Kellogg of Going Zero Waste also has some resources on zero waste parties. So where can we go to learn more and sign up for your course?
Yeah, so head over to my website. It is greenindieblog.com. The course, all the information, you can also download a PDF with all of this information that we kind of talked about, greenindieblog.com/blueprint. And like I said, if you would like a little discount, go ahead and use Hippie30 and you can take $30 off because I would love for you to join me.
Awesome. Polly, thank you so much. You are amazing.
Oh, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to the Hippie Haven podcast. Your support means the world to me. If you found value in today's episode, I encourage you to become a patron of the podcast. For just $5 a month, you can help me continue the educational work I'm doing here with all of my wonderful guests, and in return, I'll pick up a bag of trash in your honor. Visit patreon.com/ahippieinavan to support this podcast. I also have an exclusive community for the podcast over on Facebook, so if you want to connect with me and other like-minded people, just type Hippie Haven in the Facebook search bar and join our group. Thanks again, and stay tuned every Wednesday for the next episode.